Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome again to another edition of your program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International. Now, you're probably wondering, what happened to the signature tune that we begin every program with? Well, we're beginning slightly different today, because this is the September anniversary program for the 90th anniversary of Happy Station, and I thought that we'd begin a little bit different today. Now, if you go back through Happy Station's history, or even the history of any longtime radio program or television program, there was a time that, well, if you wanted to see the program or listen to the program, you had to make sure that you were either near a radio or a television at a specific time. And once you heard it, or once you watched it, if television is the case, that was it. It was never seen or heard again. Now, in the early days of Happy Station with Eddie Starts, those programs, of course, were live. And I'm talking about early. I'm talking about pre-1941. The only existence of clips are clips that were recorded on very early home recording units. In the 50s and 60s and 70s, while it's true, Tom Meyer did do some live programs, the bulk of them were actually pre-recorded. So you had to make sure that you tuned in on a Sunday at a specific time and on a specific frequency to be able to tune in. Now, you may have been lucky that if you wanted to hear it again, you can tune into one of the other frequencies for another part of the world. And of course, if propagation was in your favor, you can actually listen to the program a second time. But that was a rarity, of course, with radio and television. International broadcasting, of course, you do have that opportunity, or rather, you did have that opportunity. So you could be in Europe. And if you want to hear it again, maybe you tune to a frequency meant for Africa or the Middle East or Asia. But things have really progressed a lot, especially since 1928. They have progressed so far that today, for example, this program that we are doing right now will be available online for many, many, many years to come. Even after most of us are no longer around, the audio will still be out there. And who knows, in 100 years from now, there could be somebody actually listening to this program at this very moment. So yes, technology has changed. Now, for those who are longtime listeners of international broadcasting, if you wanted to listen to your favorite program, even as, well, close as 20 years ago, the only way was by switching on a radio. And for many of us who had been listening to shortwave radio for a good number of years, this is how it all sounded.
In Ireland, there is a Mrs. May O'Higgins, known in Ireland as a songwriter. Many records have been made of songs that May O'Higgins wrote. About 2 years ago, when I started singing on Happy Station, she wrote to me once and said, "Tom, if you sing, why don't you sing a special Happy Station song?" And I took this more or less as a joke and wrote back to her, or said to her on the show, "Well, if you want me to sing a Happy Station song, why don't you write one?" And she took me up on that. She wrote the special Happy Station song. She sent the music score and the lyrics to me and said, "Tom, you can do whatever you want with it. You can change the lyrics, you can change the music. Just see what you want to do with it, if you want to do anything with it, and let me know." Well, it took us about a year and a half, I think, but finally we got it. Arranged by Harry de Groot, a well-known musician here in Holland. We did change the music just a little bit. We didn't change the lyrics at all. And May O'Higgins used almost all the slogans that I always use on Happy Station in the song. We are going to hear the song now. It is, as I said, one of the songs on the record. It's called the Happy Station Song, and we're going to hear the Harry de Groot 20-piece orchestra, then the Letty de Jong singers. There are six of them, but they were dubbed, so there are 12 voices, and of course, the voice of little me, yours truly. The Happy Station Song.
Here's the Happy Station Show, calling listeners everywhere.
Everywhere!
It's your station of smiles across the miles, spreading happiness all can share. Whether your transmission is HM or B, you're welcome to the world's largest happy family. So hello, everyone. Hello, everywhere. From Alaska to Mexico.
Mexico.
Come and join in the swing and have a merry fling with the Happy Station Family Show. Station show, calling listeners everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's your station of smiles across the miles, spreading happiness all can share. Whether your transmission is HM or B, you're welcome to the world's largest happy family. So hello, everyone. Hello, everywhere. From Alaska to
Mexico.
Come and join in the swing and have a merry fling with the Happy Station, Happy Station, Happy Station Family Show. The Sunday Happy Station Show.
The Happy Station Song. They're performed by Tom Meyer, with backing by the Letty de Jong singers, who were dubbed, so the six singers sounded like 12, and of course the Harry de Groot Orchestra. Now, over the number of years that I have been doing the program, there have been listeners who have contacted me and said, by the way, I have a recording made of Happy Station from 1960 or 1950, the 70s and 80s and so on and so on. So there were many people out there who had recorded either on tape or on open reel, so they can actually listen to the program again in the future. Now, this, of course, was something rather unusual. Not unusual to record programs, because that's been happening ever since recording technology came into the homes. But to be able to listen to a program again rather was. Now, I remember a time, and this goes way back, about 25 years ago, there was one radio station that I was at, and every day at 12 o'clock, they would rebroadcast the BBC World Service for about 2 hours. And back in those days, well, there were two ways you could do it. Number one is you can pick it off a very large satellite dish that was very expensive, and the budget at the radio station that I was at didn't have a budget for such equipment. There were a number of radio stations that would send out programs on transcription discs and tapes, but you can't do that if it's a news program. So what they would do is, in the engineering room, they had a shortwave receiver on the roof of the building, a very, very large antenna, and they would pick up And I still remember the frequency, 6175, the BBC World Service frequency at the time. And they would pick it up on shortwave radio and then relay it on FM. Now, that may sound like a very antiquated and quaint way of doing things, but it really wasn't that uncommon. There were a number of programs relayed by the BBC on domestic FM and AM services that were, in fact, picked up by shortwave. Now, today, people don't do that. They either use satellite, which has become very economical, or they pick up the audio through the internet. There are, however, and I should mention this, some radio stations that still use shortwave as a means of distributing their programs to local FM broadcasters. One of them being Radio New Zealand International. Now, Radio New Zealand International is doing this for FM and radio stations in the Pacific. It isn't using traditional shortwave, as many of us are familiar with, but they're rather instead using DRM, which is Digital Radio Mondiale. Now, if you're familiar with the technology, as you know, you can get a very, very good FM sounding quality signal using the digital shortwave means of transmission. But that is neither here nor there. But there are some, like I said, Radio New Zealand is one that is still doing that. Now, I always found it amazing when people would contact me with recordings they'd made many, many years ago of Happy Station programs. One of those people is a gentleman by the name of Mark McKinney, who lives in the United States. And he had sent me an email saying that he'd found two open reel tapes of the last show that Eddie Starts did and the first show that Tom Meyer did, and also Tom Meyer debuting the Happy Station song. In fact, the beginning of the program, where we listened to how Happy Station sounded off shortwave way back in the 70s, was the tape that was provided to us from Mark McKinney. When Mark sent the tapes along, I said to him, "Look, I need to have you on the program because your story is quite fascinating." And this is a little bit of what we talked about. I have to first say to you, thank you very much for sending those two tapes. It was a very nice surprise after traveling, flying for more than 16 hours, getting back home and then seeing this. The jet lag just sort of went away for a few hours and then came back. But it was a very nice surprise. How did you get hold of this?
Well, I recorded those tapes on a reel-to-reel tape recorder back when they were first broadcast. And I've had them in a box in my closet all these years. So I've made cassette copies. I'm afraid I'm not really too digitally savvy, so I didn't try to convert them to a digital format. But I made cassette copies for you and just sent them to you.
Now, you started listening to Happy Station during the Eddie Starts era, right?
Yes, that's correct.
How did you come across the show? Were you just tuning around one Sunday and there was Eddie?
Yes, that's basically the way it happened. It was a good signal because it was a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles. So it came in really clearly. But I just latched on to it because I enjoyed listening. And it was very appealing.
I mean, it must be. I mean, I don't know what's going through your mind right now. I mean, this is more than 45 years ago when you started listening. Did you ever think that, you know, more than 45 years down the road, you'd be talking to the guy who's hosting the show in 2012?
No, absolutely not. But it's a nice surprise.
So you even had a chance to head to the Netherlands.
Yes.
To meet Eddie, and you also met Tom. When was that?
That was in 1973. I was in college, and I was part of a European study tour with my college. We were over there in Europe for 10 weeks, but unfortunately the itinerary did not take us to Holland, so before we left, I got permissions to leave the group and make a side trip to Holland, and I was there three or four days and got to meet both Edward Starts at his home, along with his longtime secretary, Gene Verstark. And then I got to meet Tom Meyer at the Radio Nederland studios.
What do you remember about those two encounters?
Well, both of them were very, very nice to me. Neither one could have been nicer. I know when I walked in to see Eddie for the first time, actually Gene answered the door at his home, and she took me back into his living room. I think I was in awe of this person that I'd listened to so often that I think some of the first things I said didn't make a whole lot of sense, but he very quickly put me at ease. And he's very sincere, very genuine, very nice to me. We spent several hours together. He took me in his car to see one of the palaces that the Queen lived in there in Holland. And he took me to one of his favorite cafes right on the water there, one of the canals. So I had a great time with him. And then another day I was able to take a train from Amsterdam, where I was staying, over to Hilversum and go to the Radio Nederland studios and meet with Tom. And Tom went out of his way to be nice to me. He spent more time with me than he probably really had time to spend because he was so busy at that time. But he was very nice to me and even gave me a ride in his car from the studios in Hilversum back to my hotel. So I just remember both of them being extremely nice to me.
You know what's amazing when you tell that story, and I think a lot of younger people that are maybe listening right now would say, "What, radio personalities went out their way to do this?" I mean, today I can tell you firsthand a funny story that happened a few years ago with me. There was a guy that I used to listen to on I believe it was the BBC World Service, and when I went to London, I was getting a tour of the BBC, and there he was, and we talked for a bit, and he was the coldest person I could ever meet. I mean, today, especially in international broadcasting, there doesn't seem to be the same kind of friendly contact that there was back in those days, which I think is the reason why international broadcasting maybe has declined, not just shortwave, but people don't really go out of their way anymore to really communicate directly with the listeners.
Well, both of them were very nice to me. One of the things I think about Edward Starts is that it seemed like when he was talking on the radio, he was talking directly to you. It's like you had a good friend in your living room talking to you. And he was the same way in person. He was very, very nice to me. Tom, of course, as well. He was extremely polite and went out of his way to make me feel comfortable and welcome there at the studios.
Now, you're obviously we're listening to a lot of shortwave radio at the time. What other programs would you be listening to?
Well, I listened to Radio Nederland a lot. I remember His and Hers with Jerry and Dodie Cowan, and I remember Harry Van Helder on DX Jukebox. And I listened to Radio Switzerland, some BBC, Radio Canada, so quite a few stations, but the Happy Station was my favorite program by far.
You know, I'm in touch with Dodie. She now goes by her maiden name, Deborah Ray.
Yeah.
And she's not young anymore, and I will call her up. And we'll get talking for about, you know, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. And the thing is, she is still the same way.
Well, I really enjoyed listening to her and Jerry as well on that His and Hers show. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorites as well.
Mike, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for having me, and I wish you continued success.
This is my kind of town, this Hilversum.
Yes, sir, right.
My kind of town, this Hilversum. My kind of people, too.
Uh-huh.
People who smile at you. And each time I roam, this Hilversum.
sons, yeah, calling me home this hill for sums.
Why, I just grin like a clown.
It's all my kind of town, this Hilversums.
My kind of razzmatazz.
And it has,
yeah, what?
All the jazz.
And each time I leave this Hilversums, tugging my sleeve, this Hilversums.
The happy station, this Hilversum.
It's Herr Mom Emming, this Hilversum.
One town that won't let you down, it's our kind of town.
Thank you. My kind of town, this Hilversum, not Chicago, Tom Meyer and his special guest taken from a live Happy Station show. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, your Sunday program, and this, of course, is the September anniversary special for our 90th anniversary. Next week, we will have a regular program, but as I like to say, regular, with us, there is no such thing. Now, through the course of Happy Station, there have been very few hosts. First, there was the originator and creator, Eddie Starts, who hosted the program until 1969. Then, he was followed by Tom Meyer, then followed by Pete Myers, then Jonathan Gruber. The program went on a short hiatus until it returned in 2009, about 9 years ago. One thing, of course, that all the hosts had in common. There is actually one thing, believe it or not, there is actually one thing that we all had in common and have in common. And that is, every time the program had a new host, there was a new signature tune. Now, people, of course, are familiar with how Eddie Starts would begin his program. There was the Sousa March, the nice cup of tea, the signature that Tom Meyer used in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, something that we use on the program. There was the new signature tune used by Pete Myers, and then, of course, later, Jonathan Gruber. And I thought today we'd go into the archives and listen to the one, well, that was used on the very first show that returned in March 2009. And I remember when I was trying to think about how to begin that first program after it hadn't been on the air for a good number of years. There were a few ways I could have gone. First, I could have just started off with something completely new. But if you listen to my, or the programs that I did very early on, especially when the program was only once every 2 weeks, it was sort of beginning every program paying a tribute to who came before me.
This is station PCJ of Philips Radio, broadcasting on 31 meters, our weekly Friday program, which only lasts for 60 minutes.
Thank you. nice cup of tea in the morning, for to start the day you see. At the top of 11, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea.
H-A-B-B-Y-S-T, A-D-I-O-L, Happy Station on the air, Sunday's here again. Dial a smile and have some fun, keep those people's on the run, H-A-B-B-Y-S-T.
Estación de la Alegría, the Happy Station Show. And for those who don't remember or weren't listening at the time, that was the opening of the very first Happy Station show after a very long hiatus in 2009. The very first show that I did, yes, very first show I did. And we're going to have some more memories of that show coming up in a little while. Not on today's program, but on a future program. Anyway, we're now going to talk about Jonathan Gruber. Jonathan Gruber was the last host of Happy Station while the program was on Radio Nederland. Now, he had been reading news and doing a number of other things, hosting programs for the transcription service, as well as the very popular The State We're In, which became sort of the flagship current affairs program at Radio Nederland. Now, just before Radio Nederland announced that they were going to be closing in 2012, of course, and changing their mandate, actually, we did a studio link between Taipei and Hilversum. And in Hilversum, we actually had Jonathan Gruber sitting in front of a microphone, and we spoke for about 20 minutes. And we're going to bring you that interview now, where he talks about Happy Station and how he ended up at Radio Nederland.
Well, the thing is when they handed it off to me, they never said to me at that point, oh, by the way, Jonathan, you're going to be the last host and it's all going to be over. They never said anything like that at all. It was just mine, as far as I knew. So hindsight is 20/20, and, you know, if you look back, you could see now that the writing was on the wall, that it was quite clear that they had no intention of investing in the show anymore. I was working with Rosemary at the time. It was quite clear that Rosemary did not enjoy working with me, that she felt it was over, and she left the show. And then I was all on my own. And whereas there used to be a whole team of people, there used to be a lot of management back up on the show, it was just me in an office at a certain point. And I saw that the responses were getting less and less, and that may have had something to do with me. It may have had something to do with the fact that shortwave listenership was dropping like a rock at that point in history. So for whatever reason, it was quite clear that the days of the Happy Station were numbered. And then add that to the fact that I was really very new at what I was doing, and I basically got the job because I had been working with Pete, and I was there. I mean, who else were they going to give it to? So, you know, I received it, but I had very little experience. I didn't really know what I was doing. And I made a lot of mistakes along the line. And for whatever reasons, the listenership continued to dwindle and dwindle and dwindle. And then when they came to me and told me that it was all over, I wasn't in the least surprised. And to be honest, neither was I unhappy, because I didn't think I had been doing a particularly good job, and the management didn't really seem to want it anymore.
What was the response from the audience? I mean, did you have this set of animosity from the audience, or some of the audience?
There was very little animosity from people. A lot of the people who had become dormant, I think, as listeners, who were either unhappy with me or unhappy with Pete or just not listening to Shortwave anymore, had gotten the news, and then they started to write in. Because we were asking them directly, seeing as the show is going off the air, send us your fondest memories, and we'll read them on the air, and in some cases we'll call you up and ask you to talk about them. So there was a, you know, like I said, the period at which I was working on Happy Station, there hadn't been a huge listener response at that point anymore. Then suddenly there was a much bigger response. A whole lot of people started writing in. They started telling us their stories. And that was actually very exciting. That was very inspiring for me. It really inspired me to do my best to make the last Happy Station show kind of a big send-off, which it was.
Now, you've been at Radio Netherlands for some time. How did you join the organization? Because you're originally from the United States.
Yeah, that's right. I'm originally from Brooklyn. And the reason why I came to the Netherlands in the first place was I had a Dutch girlfriend. And we had been living for a year in North Carolina. And she finished her studies there. And then we came to a decision point. Are we going to stay in the U.S. or do you want to go back? And she was tired of the U.S., so she wanted to go back to Holland. So we came over together. And then I suddenly went around looking for jobs, and I'd had a theater background. So I found out from a friend that who had been reading the news at Radio Netherlands that they were always looking for new newsreaders. And that's how I got started there, just freelancing, reading the news. And I got more and more deeply involved in making radio, not just Radio Netherlands at that time, but also for the BBC and Deutsche Welle. And then I started to get more and more deeply involved in radio production, making things for Euroquest. And when Pete Myers and I met, suddenly there was a kindred spirit. And we found ourselves sort of palling around together in the office and making the same. We shared a humor, is basically what, which I believe could only be described as extremely campy. And and yeah, you know, and if you've ever met Pete Myers personally, I mean, this is one of the world, a first class, you know, campy, flamboyant person. I mean, we were lucky that he wasn't coming in a feather boa every day to work, you know, which I understand in the 70s he actually did do.
I have some very early pictures of Pete that somebody sent me, and I know what you mean.
So, we could, I mean, you could do a whole show about Pete Myers. I mean, that guy was just amazing. Anyway, so then what happened was when Pete started to do Happy Station, when he took over from Tom, he was looking for somebody to bounce his jokes off. And well, then the choice was pretty obvious. And I would sit in with him and he would come up with these brilliant scripts. And I was just young enough and just green enough to go along with just about anything that he wrote. And so, you know, and I did quite happily, I have to say, because I thought that Pete shows were so many of Pete shows were really great. Really, really great.
I remember one of the jokes actually from Happy Station where the two of you were doing some banter back and forth, and you said and both of you at the same time before you played, I think it was Diana Ross, both said the only thing that goes in a closet is clothes.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, I think that somehow or another when Pete came on, the La Cage aux Folles level of the show got a lot higher. it was an absolute scream to work with Pete Myers, he was great because he could put on like many different hats. Because on the one hand, when he would do the Happy Station show, he would be incredibly entertaining and very flamboyant, and he would be making jokes a mile a minute, and he would make himself the butt of a joke very often, and it was indeed rather campy. And then, you know, he'd go off and he would make an amazing, insightful, intelligent documentary about the war in Lebanon the week after. You know, so, I mean, there's very few people who can just turn around like that. You know, I mean, he was just one of the most sophisticated, intelligent, thoughtful, and experienced broadcasters I'd ever worked with, who had absolutely no problem whatsoever about making a nude, you know, carnival fart jokes. So you know, he was a spectacular person, Pete Myers.
So from that point, when Happy Station ended, is this when you moved more towards the current affairs and feature side? Because at the show at the time, Radio Netherlands had a show that was exported overseas called called EuroQuest, which had a pretty long run, which eventually stopped. And then, of course, not too long after, the state we're in started up. So how did you make that transition? Because you were doing a show that was very off the wall. You'd working with Pete, who was even more off the wall. Was it easy for you to go into doing stuff that was more serious?
Well, yeah, I think at that point, after having done the Happy Station and having found it to be, on my own, a generally unpleasant experience. I mean, with Pete, it was amazing fun. You know, it was really fabulous doing it with him. But doing it on my own, knowing that the show was coming to an end, not getting the support, and also generally feeling rather inexperienced and out of depth, I was looking for something very different anyway. I was moving in a newsier direction. So yeah, when EuroQuest came my way, because it was being produced by somebody else entirely, when EuroQuest came my way, it was exactly the change that I was looking for. I wanted to do something more serious. I wanted to do, I guess, you know, between quotes, proper journalism.
Now, one of the big differences between EuroQuest and the state we're in is that the state we're in takes one subject and focuses on that subject for an entire hour. And, I mean, I'm a listener of the show, and I've heard some very, very touching stories on the show. Is that difficult for you to do sometimes with some of the stories that you cover?
By that you mean when we do the state we're in, that's a show that often covers human rights topics and some of the things that people have gone through can be harrowing. Yeah, give me a for example.
Well, for example, there was one show that you did on the comfort women,
right?
Which is actually one of my favorites that you've done, because it's a subject that I'm very, very interested in. And I remember when I was listening to it, and when I listened to it again, you really sounded touched by what that woman was saying.
I'm very often touched by the guests that we speak with. I mean, one of the ways that we approach these topics, we like to approach big news stories or stories that have to do with the big moments in history or big moments in people's lives, rather than, say, covering what would be happening in Egypt through a correspondent, we would find an Egyptian. So rather than talk about with an expert or a historian about the plight of comfort women in Korea or Dutch comfort women or what happened in Indonesia, we decided if we're going to do this, we have to find somebody who had been through this before they're all gone, because they're all getting very old now. So we found ourselves a woman named Ha Mo-ni, which I believe means grandma in Korean. And she was a comfort woman. She was captured by the Japanese. She was Korean. She'd been through this experience. And we got her to talk in great detail, to talk about exactly what had happened to her. The really awful, inhuman events of what had happened, you know, getting close to 65, 70 years ago now, you know, and it's all there, still very fresh for her. And she's not over it. She's simply not over it. And to get her to talk at that level, I mean, the reason why I wanted her to go into such detail was I wanted her to be able to express to people who are listening just how real this was. Because to many people now, it's history. So it needs to not be history. We need to humanize these inhuman events for people. They need to feel it with her to a certain extent. Not that that's really possible, but that's what we're trying to achieve. So I am asking her to go into a lot of detail about the very awful things that had happened to her. And the reason why I'm doing that is because we need to make it human. We need to make it real for everybody. We need to make them understand the tragedy and to feel her emotions, and not to talk about them with the distance of the correspondents or the distance of the historian or the expert. We're going straight to the source, as it were. So is that hard for me to listen to week in, week out when I'm doing these interviews in order to answer your question? No, it's not hard at all. It's fascinating to me. It's a privilege. It's interesting. It's extraordinary. And it's putting me in the position of being to speak with people who have lived with or are creating history. And it's probably one of the finest jobs in the world to be able to do something like this.
Because one of the important elements of the show, of course, is you tell stories like you just mentioned that you normally, the story's out there, people have heard it maybe from generation to generation, but it's never been talked about publicly. Another show that I remember very well was when you talked about the incident that happened in Indonesia when Indonesia was still part of the Netherlands, when it was the Dutch East Indies, and how Dutch soldiers were ordered to open fire on civilians in this one village. And I remember hearing the voices of the soldiers who were involved in that, and it's almost as if for them, it was like a release to be able to talk about it publicly, because maybe if they've been holding it in for more than 30 years, 40 years or longer, they can actually say it publicly. It's almost like a sort of therapy almost.
Well, let me just tell you very quickly that those original interviews were done by Dira Sujan a few years earlier. I didn't actually speak with those gentlemen. We took the audio and we reversioned it, because we wanted to play off the interview that happened earlier in the show with one of the last survivors of the Rauwegade massacre, in which those Dutch soldiers, not the ones we spoke with, but with members of the Dutch colonial forces who went in to put down the Indonesian insurrection, which also could be called the Indonesian Independence War, which led to modern-day Indonesia. Right after World War II, more than 100,000 Dutch soldiers were sent to Indonesia to put down the rebellion, which is quite incredible when you think of the fact that the country was destitute and just came out of World War II. Anyway, one of the incidents was they surrounded a village and they killed all of the men and boys in the village, every single last one of them. It was a total massacre. And so earlier in that show, I spoke with the last surviving man from that massacre, and he's come over to ask the Dutch not for an apology, but simply for compensation. And that's actually quite extraordinary, because he was laughing. He harbored no ill feelings. He thought it was lovely that the Dutch were ready to receive him in this nice way. But as far as we know, he's still waiting for his compensation. And then what we did was we took that piece from Dira Sujan from years earlier called Holland's Black Page. That was another show. And we took those Dutch colonial soldiers to talk about exactly what it was like to go into Indonesia at that time and to commit these acts. Now, many, many, many Dutch soldiers here in the Netherlands who've experienced this do not want to talk about it, and they feel that they did a good job. They did the job that they were asked to do. But some of them, like the gentleman we interviewed, feel tremendous shame for what they were told to do. So, and that's exactly what those interviews were about, was speaking with these men, talking about the massacres that they've committed and how they've been trying to deal with that years later. And also about the fact that, and this is quite interesting aspect of life in the Netherlands, the fact that almost nobody talks about it, and it still continues to be tossed under the carpet here in this country. Really, talking about the Dutch role in the Indonesian War of Independence here is still pretty taboo.
One final thing, actually, that I want to talk about. I mean, you're working for a station that has a tremendous history. I first started listening to Radio Netherlands when I was 9 years old in the late 1970s, and Radio Netherlands has had a big impact on me and for the reasons why I went into radio. What is it like working for an organization that has such an incredible history, a pioneering history, some announcers that people today may have never heard them, but they know the names like Harry Van Gelder, Dodie and Jerry Cohen, and Eddie Starts, and others. What does that feel like?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm one of the last people here at Radio Netherlands working in English who knows those names. I'm one of the last people here who understands Radio Netherlands' place in broadcasting history. For most of the people who work here, and by that I mean not just my colleagues but also management, that concept has really very much been lost. And I think that that's sad. I think that Radio Netherlands' future in English on shortwave is going to be very short now. And this is my opinion. I am not expressing anything that management has said to me at this point, but it wouldn't surprise me if they turned off all shortwave in English except to Africa sooner rather than later. Again, this is what I think is going to happen. And I think it's probably going to happen with a whimper. I think it's just simply, they're just simply going to pull the plug on it. And I do think that that's said. I think, I personally think it would be the right decision to turn it off at this point because our English broadcasts are very vestigial. There's very little going on in English right now. Most of our English language production is geared towards partner stations and getting rebroadcast by other stations around the world and not towards shortwave. And we're making very little programming in English, although the programming that we are making is probably the best we've ever made at this point. I mean, I think the state we're in is an amazing show, and we have another show called Earthbeat, and we're, you know, we have other shows in the works. And the idea is that these shows don't get on the air unless there's a listenership, and that listenership won't be coming through shortwave, but it will be coming through rebroadcasts of local stations in other countries. In other words, through partnerships, and they will play our show. And in that way, the Radio Netherlands brand continues. But I do have a very strong sense of how important English language broadcasting from Radio Netherlands was. And I don't know how, but it would be, I think, fitting if there were something to show for it. If there was some way, let's say the day comes when they finally do pull the plug on English language and English on shortwave, it would be great if they could, we could somehow have one final big blast, just like on Happy Station. You know, we blew, for that last Happy Station show, we kind of blew the whole year's budget on the one show right there. You know, we got in a band, you know, we hired a big studio, we got studio guests, you know, and I think it would be nice if we could do that. Not that I'm sure that a lot of people are still listening to it out there. I don't think there are very many. But it would be nice if we did that, if we just said goodbye properly. You know that on the BBC, they just ended the a number of language services on the BBC. And there was a recognition of what that meant. Like, for instance, when they said goodbye to the BBC Serbian language service, when it went off the air, they had one big final broadcast and they made a big show of it. And that's what I would like to see happen here. So when the day comes that management does come to me, and I do believe that that day is coming one day, probably in the next couple of years, that they say, that's it for shortwave in English. You know, I'm going to put the idea to them that maybe we should do something with it. I don't know. I don't know what it would be, but maybe we should do something.
Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us on the Happy Station Show. And by the way, I would advise you to listen to this week's edition of The State We're In, because Jonathan will be reporting about another Jonathan Gruber, correct?
That's correct, sir. That is correct.
Jonathan, thank you very much.
It was my pleasure, Keith, and good luck.
And that, of course, was my conversation with Jonathan Gruber. At the end of it, we said there's an edition of The State We're In where he talks about two Jonathan Grubers. I'm not going to say anything about that. We'll play it. We'll play it actually on another program. That was a lot of fun. It has a very interesting story behind it. Now, we are, of course, the month of September. You know, it's amazing how time flies because it's September the 30th. And is it September 30th? Yes, it is, actually. It is. I was keep forgetting, actually. This month's right. September only has 30 days, not 31 days. Anyway, we are, of course, next week going to be returning to our normal fare. And then, of course, in October, the last Sunday in October, that is, which is the 28th of October. October has 31 days. Yes, October 28th will be the last of our monthly specials before we do our big special in the month of November. And what do we have planned for that? Well, I'm not going to say anything because I don't think we should say anything at the moment. The thing, of course, it's always best to do is just to have people tune in, find out, and you'll see what we have planned. Now, we still have some time, so you can, of course, contact us at any time if you would like to take part in that program, pcjmedia@gmail.com, pcjmedia@gmail.com, and we will contact you for that program. So
please do so. You know, just now, I actually, during the entire almost 1 hour that we've been here in the studio, I really haven't looked outside, and I just looked outside right now, and I know it's September, and I know it doesn't snow in Taiwan, except maybe once a year way up in the mountains, but when I look outside the window, if this was television, I can point the camera in that direction, because it actually looks like snow is falling, but it isn't snow, it's actually rain. Yuck. That's the only thing I will say is, yuck. Anyway, we're going to leave you today with a song that Tom Meyer recorded in Atlanta, in Georgia, in the United States. It was for an LP called Hey, Listen. Now, some of you, I know, will even have a copy of that LP. And it was songs that he had sung during Happy Station, as well as some others. And it's actually a very good album, very well recorded, with members of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. So we're going to be ending with a song from that on the program today. It's called I Could Love You More, Tom Meyer. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Pelham saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
Of you.